This is Theology on the Go, a brief interview about an eternal truth.
The Confessional Presbyterian Journal is a long-running academic journal focused on matters of interest to, as you would imagine, confessional Presbyterians and, of course, our friends. And that would include Reformed Baptists and other evangelical Protestants just generally. It's, I think, a very helpful platform, you might say, or venue for promoting discussion among conservative and confessional evangelicals on matters not just of confessional theology, but also more broadly speaking, biblical theology, recent publications, and even ongoing debates.
Hello, and welcome to Theology on the Go. I am Jonathan Master, joined as always by my friend and co-host, James Dalzell. James, how are you?
I'm well. I'm well. Looking forward, as always, to a good interview today about a journal to which I've contributed and which maybe some of our listeners would be unaware, but should be aware.
So. Yeah. Yeah. No, we're eager to introduce this journal to our listeners. It's less well known than it should be, but those who know of it really treasure it. And also the added benefit for me today is we get to have a friend, a personal friend of mine. And a friend of the podcast, pastor of Antioch Presbyterian Church, Zach Groff. So, Zach, you're the managing editor of Confessional Presbyterian, and why don't you tell us a little bit about the Confessional Presbyterian Journal?
I'd be happy to. Jonathan, James, thank you for having me on. I am indeed a friend of the podcast, longtime listener, first-time caller, as they say, and it's a real pleasure to have this opportunity. The Confessional Presbyterian Journal is a long-running academic journal focused on matters of interest to, as you would imagine, confessional Presbyterians and, of course, our friends. And that would include Reformed Baptists and other evangelical Protestants just generally. The subtitle for the journal is A Journal for Discussion of Presbyterian Doctrine and Practice, and it's been around for about 20 years. So this year, 2024, we're working on our 20th volume, but we just published at the end of last year our 19th volume in 2023. And so it's I think, a very helpful platform, you might say, or venue for promoting discussion among conservative and confessional evangelicals on matters not just of confessional theology, but also more broadly speaking, biblical theology, recent publications, and even ongoing debates.
So tell us a little bit about Volume 19, Zach, why it is that. Because these journals are typically thematic. Not every article deals with the same broad theme, but they are thematic. And so this year's is on the PCA. So tell us a little bit about Volume 19.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. What's interesting about this journal, and particularly this issue, is the focus on not just the founding of the PCA, but the Presbyterian Church in America at 50 years old as the largest confessional Presbyterian body in the United States of America and one of the foremost in the world, I think we can say rightly. What makes it unique this year for the Confessional Presbyterian Journal is typically our cover subjects and whatever themes we're addressing are individuals. So individual figures from Protestant and Christian history, mostly Presbyterians, but also we've had Dutch Reformed and confessional Anglican figures of the past featured on the front of the cover as well. And so this year, we broke the mold a bit and featured a scene from the first General Assembly of the PCA on the cover. And rather than focusing on one individual in our feature articles, we focused on the denomination and its first 50 years of ministry together and development. And that's a bit of a unique approach to establishing a theme and developing a theme for this journal. But it's one that I think the editors and the contributors really pulled off successfully. It ended up being our longest ever issue by about 15 or 20 pages. And the general editor, Chris Coldwell, said to me privately that he thinks this is perhaps the strongest issue we've ever published and certainly the most unified in terms of treatment of a subject.
Zach, maybe you could address with the question, why should non-PCA Presbyterians or non-Presbyterians be interested in the history of the PCA? And I'm picking out just last year's 2023 issue, but then you often pick up issues and topics within Presbyterianism. And I should say to our listeners, this is one thing I think that actually marks this journal as distinct from other academic or even Presbyterian journals is the attempt to hang something together thematically, even if it sort of goes off the theme. There's sort of a core each year. So in last year's issue that we're discussing, why non-PCA and non-Presbyterian interest in the PCA? Should it matter to, so to speak, the rest of us?
I think it does, James. And one of the benefits to approaching issues that have a broad interest from a particular perspective, one of the advantages to that is a transparency. And so it's not that there isn't a diversity of voices contributing to the journal. And in fact, you'll see even sic et non kind of interactions, point counterpoint interactions from issue to issue. And of course, we have a responses section even and editorials. And but what's valuable about our approach and approach of other journals that are similar is that it is coming from a distinct perspective. And so if you ask yourself, you know, I wonder what confessional Presbyterians are saying about X, Y, or Z, you could go to the index of the Confessional Presbyterian Journal and find several articles, perhaps taking slightly different approaches, but all interacting from that perspective. And then even as you mentioned, being a contributor yourself in the past, we occasionally have friends and that are more or less like-minded, but from a little bit outside of the confessional Presbyterian world, contributing and engaging in the conversation in a way that is very valuable, both for those who would call themselves confessional Presbyterians and those who are interested in how that particular tradition develops different theological loci or subjects. I think that, again, the journal has pulled it off well, and particularly the last few years, what has been encouraging is that with Greenville Seminary's adoption of the journal and sponsorship of the journal and now patronage of the journal as its own, there is a sense that moving forward, this journal will continue past any one individual's work on it as it's wedded to an institution that, though very particular in its identity as confessional and Presbyterian, yet has broader engagement and appeal within evangelical Protestantism, generally speaking.
Zach, I wonder, as you think through this past issue, the history of the PCA, and I know you contributed to it and you had, in one sense, a hand in everything that was published just through your editorial work. What were some things that jumped out at you? I mean, what are some things that people might be interested in about the history of the PCA? And I should also say, parenthetically, one of the things about this journal that first intrigued me, and this was a long time ago when I first saw a confessional Presbyterian journal, is it's beautiful, it's big, it's a large format, it comes out once a year, it's nicely done. So it's kind of a collector's item. I mean, we'll get people writing us, they're looking for the one issue that they don't have in their collection, and you'll see lots of people with them stacked together on their shelf because it really does make for just a nice, almost reference collection of topics, like you mentioned. But in any case, that's a pitch for it. But I wanted to ask about the issue. What are some articles or arguments or even historical facts that jumped out at you that were of interest in this particular issue?
You know, as we were putting this issue together and soliciting for contributions, not financial, but contributions of writing, of course. One of the things that was very gratifying is seeing a real excitement and celebration of the first 50 years of the Presbyterian Church in America and all that entails and the different contributions of the PCA to confessional Presbyterianism, even beyond the PCA. And so there are a number of pieces in this issue dealing with interchurch relations, ecumenicity, international ramifications of the PCA's ministry, And that celebratory note is one that I really appreciate as someone who loves the PCA. I mean, I grew up in the PCUSA, but it was in the PCA where I was exposed to the Westminster Standards and historic Presbyterianism. And I'm eternally grateful for that. In case it wasn't clear earlier, we focused on the PCA because 2023 marked the 50th anniversary of the first General Assembly. Now, as an academic journal, we don't engage in just uncritical analysis. And so there is what I would call a critical appreciation of the denomination, a recognition of areas where it can grow and be more faithful and to the scriptures, more true to the Reformed faith, more obedient to the Great Commission, as the denomination's motto suggests. And also, and this is something that longtime readers of the journal will appreciate, even as we treated a denominational subject, there were still several articles of a biographical nature where we examine the life or the lives of certain individuals who have had a monumental influence on the PCA for good, and also individuals maybe on the fringes of the PCA denominationally speaking, but yet have had very healthy contributions to the life of the denomination and to the life of similar denominations in America and around the world. But one ringing theme, Jonathan, to really get to the heart of your question, is when we talk about denominations, when we talk about the PCA in particular, I think it can be easy to fall into a trap of thinking that, you know, denominations will be strong in one area or the other, particularly will be strong in handling the Bible and the truth and guarding the truth, or strong in promoting a particular confession of faith, or strong in pursuing the Great Commission. But there's almost a sense that strength in one area is to the detriment of attention in the other two. And that's simply, I think, a wrong way of looking at it. And all the authors that contributed to this lend support to the idea that to be faithful to the scriptures, one must be true to the Reformed faith and obedient to the Great Commission. And those lines of relationship cross every other way. And so if you want to have a Great Commission denomination, you must be careful to guard the truth and to uphold the Bible's gospel, or else you're promoting something that is out of accord with the Great Commission. And we can go on in further examination of that. But that's one of the great themes, I think, of this issue in terms of especially how it's played out in the history of the PCA.
Zach, what are, just in your own personal views, the editor, reader, not weighing the value of each of the articles objectively, but subjectively, what are a few that jumped out to you that you're especially excited about, that you think readers might be surprised to find out about, maybe not so common knowledge?
Well, I would say that some of the most groundbreaking articles here would include those written by Scott Cook, Thomas Rickard. Scott Cook wrote an article on the history and formation of the Standing Judicial Commission in the Presbyterian Church in America. I think that's the first academic treatment or academic level treatment of the creation of the SJC. And it's really about as early as you could write such a piece, since the SJC is about, I don't know, 33 years old or so. And so now is the time for these initial explorations. Thomas Rickard wrote a very a fascinating historical look at oaths and vows and witnesses in the courts of Presbyterian churches in general, but focusing particularly on how that's manifested itself in the PCA. Another excellent article that strikes at a different note or strikes a different chord would be William Van Duderward's piece on ecclesial unity and creation doctrine. This being one of the major debates in the history of the PCA, it was appropriate in this issue to include this piece. And Dr. Van Duderward develops a very practical theological position on how we can maintain unity even in the face of a diverse approaches to the earliest chapters of Genesis and what it means that God created all things very good in the space of 6 days. Of course, you know, there are other articles, including One of my contributions, which served as the anchor for the issue, obedient to the Great Commission, the Presbyterian Church in America at 50, giving a survey of the first half century of the PCA. And then we have several pieces that don't have to do with the PCA directly, but would be of interest to your readers. One thing, James, I would want to mention, you know, I'm talking about all this stuff, and your listeners might say, I've never picked up an academic journal in my life. What in the world does this have to do with me? Why would I want to read it? And what I'd say is that the editors of the journal, while seeking to promote a real serious-minded academic standard, yet want to produce an accessible journal that would be valuable and useful to readers at all levels. So whether you're a seminary student or a college or seminary professor, or a member of a church who likes to read good, unique literature on theology and church history and the Bible, I think that this journal would be of interest to you, and particularly this issue for members of the PCA and our sister denominations like the OPC and our Reformed Baptist friends and the ARP.
I noticed that J. Gresham Machen put in a couple appearances, though long dead before the formation of the PCA.
Yeah, Sean Morris has a great article in this on John Gresham Machen as the hidden founding father of the PCA, making an argument that really Machen's thought and influence in American Presbyterianism generally inspired the founding generation of the PCA, and I think it's a strong argument to make. And D.G. Hart contributed a fascinating piece on relationships between the PCA and the OPC over the years. And that really complemented Zachary Garris's article on ecumenicity in the PCUS, the PCA's antecedent denomination, and how foolhardy attempts at merger with more liberal denominations really fueled the trajectory to a continuing church, even in the prehistory for the PCA. So it's just a really great diversity of articles here and contributors within our little world. And I think that your listeners would enjoy becoming readers of the Confessional Presbyterian Journal.
Zach, there are a couple other things that you guys contribute, like section-wise, that are a little bit offbeat. Book reviews, everyone expects those, and you guys have good book reviews with ample space to really say it. What's another thing that can be that people can expect, even if they get into back issues of the CPJ, that are peculiar to the CPJ?
You know, that's a good way of putting it, James. Our general editor, Chris Caldwell, has been producing and editing the CPJ for years and years now, and before that with Naphtali Press anthologies and as a labor of love. And some of these unique sections really bear the marks of his involvement and his passions that I think are worthy of attention, even by those who might be surprised by them. One of the sections, every journal has a fresh setting of a psalm in meter that can be sung, and that's the Salo section. This one has a setting of Psalm 83. And then he also includes a section called Antiquary, where he'll have something that's been out of print for a long time or has never even been put into print, but he transcribes out of handwritten notes or some out of print manuscript and features that in the journal. And then sometimes, we didn't do it this issue, but we have in the past, you have what's called opuscula selecta, which would be fresh translations out of Latin or other languages of Reformed literature that have never appeared in English before. And so those sections are always a treat. I think they're kind of like icing on the cake. It's really added value to the journal. But I think that's what you're referring to. And I'm glad you brought it up because those can be easy to miss in the back of the journal, but they're real gems.
Zach, just two last questions. One, if our listeners are intrigued by this and they want to get a hold of the journal, they want to subscribe, maybe get back issues, look over the index, see what, you know, what they've missed. How does a listener do that? And then also, maybe you could just talk briefly about what issue 20 is going to be. I know issue 20 is already underway. And so after the 50th anniversary of the PCA, what is CPJ tackling next?
Well, if you're interested in the Confessional Presbyterian Journal, the place to go is actually one that's very familiar to Dr. Master, and that would be the website of Greenville Presbyterian Theological Seminary. Go to gpts.edu and look up CP Journal or Confessional Presbyterian Journal in the search bar or under, I think, the Engage tab currently. As the website changes, the online home of the Confessional Presbyterian Journal might adjust somewhat, but currently there's an exhaustive index, a listing of authors and articles, fully searchable. And so you can look at what's available and where you might want to dip in, but also if you want to order or subscribe to the journal, there's a place to do that on the website as well. And you can contact the seminary bookstore for help in doing that. In terms of the next issue, volume 20 for the current year, 2024, we're returning back to our regular practice of featuring an individual portrait on the cover calling for papers dealing with an individual. And this year, I'm really pleased, we're going to be considering William Perkins. And so at this point, we have an author lined up to give us the anchor biographical sketch of Dr. Perkins. It's actually a Perkins scholar himself. Until we have it in hand, I won't announce who that is. And we're currently reaching out to other authorities in the field and scholars and PhD students and others that we know are working on Perkins material to put together another great roster of feature articles. And if you're interested in submitting and you're listening and you are a student or a pastor or a professor and this intrigues you, I encourage you to go again to gpts.edu and look up the submissions tab for the Confessional Presbyterian Journal, or you can contact me or I'm sure Dr. Master, and we'd be happy to hear from you.
Zach, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it. No one is better placed than you to answer these questions about CPJ, and thanks for your work on it, and thanks for giving us some time today.
Well, thank you, brothers. I really enjoyed it.